I'm Amy Ryan, and I played Holly Flax on The Office.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another installment of The Office Deep Dive. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. I hope you're doing very well today. And if you're not, well, I think I'm about to change that, because my guest on the podcast today is the truly extraordinary Amy Ryan. Now, I have to come clean about something here, okay? When Amy Ryan showed up on the set of The Office for the first time, I freaked out a little bit because I am a huge Amy Ryan fan. If you have not seen her work prior to The Office, you should. Season 2 of The Wire, genius. Her Oscar-nominated performance in Gone Baby Gone is so heartbreaking and amazing. Now, I interviewed Amy in New York right after my interview with Paul Feig. And partly because we live on opposite coasts, I had not seen Amy in such a long time. Many years, in fact. And immediately, boom, I'm just so happy to see her again. I have this special place in my heart for Amy. And what's amazing to me is that so many people have a special place in their heart for Amy, even though she only appeared in 15 of our 200 plus episodes. I mean, I could imagine a world where people were not so fond of Amy and the character she played, because basically she's the reason that Michael Scott left The Office, right? But Amy was so undeniably perfect and wonderful as Holly that you just couldn't help falling in love with her. Plus, she and I, for better or worse, we are linked together forever because of the very special Kevin Holly storyline, which, well, you'll hear us get into shortly. Anyway, am I gushing? I'm gushing. I can't help it. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is, Amy Ryan.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
So I was here and we were.
You
thank you.
Do you need anything else, either of you?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Masseuse? No?
Well, like, I mean, what's on the list? I just need beverages. There's nothing but beverages on this table. So.
I know. I don't know.
Hydrate. I'm caffeinating.
I was here very briefly.
You saw John?
I saw John. Let me get rid of these Paul things.
Oh. Old news.
I mean, just get rid of it. And then, yeah, Paul was, I think he's doing a pilot and then a movie back to back. So he was like, you can come to New York or I'll see you in May or something like that.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll come back.
That's great. So this worked out then.
Yes. How are you?
Good. Really good.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So before you were cast, did you watch the show?
Mm-hmm. My history of The Office started with my neighbor, Noleen Burke, who came home from Ireland visiting her family with the British series. She said, this is a really funny show. You have to watch it. And she had, you know, like the DVD PAL or whatever.
Right.
So I was full on in convert from the Ricky Gervais series. Then I heard they were making an American version, and I thought that was just blasphemous. I was like, why? Why can't they just import the show? Why do we import our shows or export our shows there? But we Americans need to remake something that's perfect.
Right.
And I thought it was the worst idea ever. And then I started seeing the cast assembled. I was like, oh, this is going to be funny. And it was. And I watched the American version happily. And then thought, like, I enjoy comedy. I'm not good at the four-camera sitcom thing.
Yeah.
I can't land the ba-dum-bum, the whatever.
Right.
But I, when I saw The Office, I was like, oh, this is character-based comedy. This is not rhythm. I mean, there are some rhythms in it, of course, but like, it's not so dependent on that joke and then the alternative punchline for that joke that all the writers stand around writing and
right,
hope you
right.
get it. That is like too stressful for me. So anyway, The Office, I felt like, okay, here's a world I could fit into in terms of building a character and their, you know, everything is life or death for them.
So what was the process of you being cast on the show? Did they approached you to come in?
That was the year I was nominated for an Oscar for Gone Baby Gone. And I remember saying to my agent, half joking, but not really, I was like, you know, if we have any pull right now, I want to cash it in on The Office.
I had not heard that.
Yeah. And he's like, okay. And apparently, simultaneously, Paul Lieberstein, who I had known from a sitcom many, many years earlier called The Naked Truth that he was writing on, knew of me, but also was a fan of The Wire. And so I think, I'm not sure who called first, but I think both were, like, there was a coincidence of timing in,
right.
in that case. So I showed up.
I've heard the
and
story,
I remember
by the way.
Rain
go ahead.
Going like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you here? Anyway, I felt very, very confident in my decision that this is where I wanted to be next. Because a lot of all, you know, a lot of the opportunities as well, like there's not much imagination once you maybe poke through with a role, you know, as you may know from your own experience, like people are like, great, we have this new role for you. And she's a drug addicted mother. You're like, you mean like the one I just played? Okay.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like so much fun.
Yeah, for a while, playing someone intelligent was not coming to me, surprisingly.
Isn't that frustrating? It's so yeah. But making those hard right turns and giving other people whiplash is what I was after. Like, so certainly like going to a comedy and just being well-groomed in a role, you know. So I was really grateful for that, that they thought it was a good idea too.
So when you were cast, did you at that moment have any idea of where it was going to go?
No, but I understood that I was there on a trial basis. I think it was the last episode, like Goodbye Toby, I came in, and I think it was a pretty fancy audition, basically, like
right.
having not read for the role, like, okay, if this doesn't work out, because they said, like, you know, maybe might be love interest for Michael Scott. We're not sure, but, you know, we still have some ideas. But yet again, there was the British version to kind of go by. And there was that character, I forget her name, but where he finally found someone that the affection was mutual.
Right.
But then I believe like about that part is, I think, where it stopped, like
yes.
the comparison. So I knew it was a little up in the air and depended on how well I did. I mean, I felt very welcome by all you guys. But there is a weird thing about being a fan of a show and then being employed by that show. I remember doing it like one episode of ER back in the day, like
right.
shocked that the hallway was so little, that they did all that choreography of like running through with gurneys and such. And you know, The Wire was the same thing, like being a big fan of the show and then joining the company in the second season. It takes a minute to just like calm down.
Right.
You know, just
no.
Like,
well, being a guest star is a, you know, a very difficult thing.
You're the transfer student from another school.
Totally.
Yeah, like, well, who's going to sit with me at lunch?
Were you nervous when you walked onto set the first time?
I was nervous. I can tell because my head is tilted down like this.
Yeah.
And because my daughter just watched that episode. And so having the hindsight, like, I was like, oh, yeah, look, you're not like standing up straight.
Really?
Yeah. Just that little tilt of the head. Like maybe no one will notice if I mess up.
Wow.
And then, you know, a lot of that quickly subsided because the nature of being on The Office is you are a main character and an extra all in one.
Right.
You are in the background every scene if you don't have spoken lines. And I remember being positioned by one of the low file cabinets and pretending to go through papers and kind of shocked because all that those papers were like old medical records.
Yes.
And I thought, oh my God, this is somebody's social security number. This is somebody's medical history. This is, I was just shocked. Anyway.
Yeah, they recycle. That was our, Kate Flannery and I talked about that, which I had forgotten. Yeah.
Get a shredder, people. Shred your stuff. You might end up a prop on the office.
On the office, exactly. Your chemistry with Steve from the beginning is amazing. Did you guys have a discussion? I mean, you were a fan of the show, so you knew his character very well, but how much of it was a discussion about, you know, potentially Holly being the female version of him, or is that how it was described, or?
No.
That was you?
It wasn't described that way, but, you know, just in the writing, I mean, it was so generous of the writers to offer me those tidbits, whether it was like rapping with him or, you know, the Yoda thing. Like, clearly they're saying she is of like, this is kinfolk.
Yes.
And then just as an actor, I was like, well, I can't do, you know, Steve's bit. Like, I can't. And even if I tried, I couldn't. But like, how do you make it the same but different, you know? And I just love that idea that there's a lid for every pot. You know, I will say this. So sad. I don't know if I really want to admit this, but after however many years playing different parts and theater and other TV and film, I get a call from my high school boyfriend. He's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you're finally playing yourself.
So, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I can't really deny that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And my like nerdy, geeky side was on the rise there. So, yeah.
So drug-addled single mother.
Oh, no, that's part of, that's the other side of my personality.
Oh, okay.
I like to keep it balanced.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
to. Don't pigeonhole me.
Yeah, sorry. You had worked with Steve before.
Very briefly, yeah. So Steve starred in a film called Dan in Real Life that Peter Hedges wrote and directed. Peter's an old friend of mine, and I have a really teeny tiny part in there playing his sister-in-law. It's a big extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter got together a bunch of his New York actor friends. And we all were up in Rhode Island for, I don't know, 6-8 weeks or so. Anyway, the whole company was very close, and that's where I met Steve. You know, just chit-chatting. We really didn't have any scenes together, you know, stuff like that. But I don't know. I get asked that a lot about what's the chemistry with Steve. And I have to say, I have to give him credit for being the most grounded, down-to-earth, creative genius that you can dream of. Because he's got a really good thing going on, and he isn't subliminally, I'm going to change that word because who can say subliminally?
Subliminally.
he is in no way saying, back up, let me do my thing. I've experienced that on sets with other actors, like they're not even really looking at you, or, you know, they can do it all. They don't even need you off camera for their close up. But Steve, I guess that's his early days, you know, improv, being with a group. He's so generous. And I always thought it was weird. He'd be like, the first one would be like, that's so funny. He'd tell everyone like how funny they were, you know, and you just like, he's just, your shoulders drop a little bit. You're like a little more relaxed each time.
Right.
But I don't know. I did say to him one time, I said, I know this sounds really flaky, but I really feel like I've known you before in my life. And he said, I feel the same. So I think it was just about trust and just having fun. Like,
so you were there and then you left. And it's interesting because, you know, you talk about Jim and Pam, their relationship played just very purely. And then all of Michael's relationships played essentially totally for comedy, at least until Holly, you know, like the Carol, the real estate agent and Jan that was like so preposterous and terrible. But I think for me, even though you guys were so close and that chemistry was there, in my head, you left and it went away. Like it went away. And for some reason, the herpes episode where he calls you, I suddenly went, oh, this is it. Like this is where they're going. Where were you in terms of the discussion about you coming back again? Or did you say no way?
No, we left it open and I'd love to come. But for me, it was also about location. I live in New York and love being in New York. So I didn't want to relocate to Los Angeles, but I was happy to come and go. And then also in that time, then I was pregnant and had my daughter, Georgia. So there was a big chunk off while that was happening.
Yeah. Where do you feel like Michael's search for the American dream, you know, happiness, success, family, you know, that's all he's looking for, and nobody will give it to him except Dwight, that he doesn't want.
Right, I know. Dwight will do anything for him.
But that it becomes the people that are in this office until you come along. How do you feel like that transition for him, his character, happened, or how did you see it?
Well, I don't know if I can speak so clearly about Michael in that way, but I just feel like maybe, you know, Michael just became just a happier person. And,
right.
You know, he's still crazy. That's what I still like. Like, he still makes really bad choices along the way and things that make other people cringe. Like, it's not like suddenly Holly comes and spreads this magic pixie dust on him and he's like a normal person.
Right.
But she's got a little of that too. So it's permissible in their world. I don't know. I think, you know, when I'm stopped or asked questions, you know, if it's someone on the street or... I'm always amazed at how much, like, they root for a guy they don't like.
Right.
And they're so glad he met me. You know that, or, you know, he met Holly.
Right.
And I love that that's all in conflict with each other. So what does Holly mean for Michael? I mean, it's a guy who's just so desperate to have a win somewhere in his life or to be that guy. You know, he poses at that for so long, and then here's someone he doesn't have to work that hard with for the first time we see him, or that we've known him rather. And I don't know, maybe that it's all going to be okay. Like, if there's one phrase to it, like, you know, we all matter. At the end of the day, we all matter. There is someone for you. And if you don't feel good along the way, then you're just with the wrong person. And maybe that sounds easier said than done. And there's someone single alone being, thanks for that advice, Amy Ryan. You suck.
No.
I think there's, I guess progress is the word. He's gotten out of his own way.
Yeah, but I think that on the show, all of the characters, you bring up a really interesting point that people haven't talked to so much, but so much is about just wanting to win one. Like, just having that one success.
Yeah.
Be it in work or in life or in love or whatever. And Holly really is that for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he didn't have to work that hard for it. I mean, she was in as fast as he was, pretty much. So, you know, that's also fun to see him get knocked back a bit.
Right.
You know?
Right. He can more be himself and not pose.
He doesn't need to stalk a woman to date her.
Right. Right. He doesn't have to pose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, we all feared as viewers, if you say, like, what does this mean for the show?
Right.
Is he leaving the show? Back up.
Right.
And, you know, that proposal, when I had to walk down the line of everybody holding candles, I couldn't stop crying. I thought it was one of those things where it's like, I had to tell myself, like, this isn't real. But there's something about everybody's face, like, looking so lovingly. And it was such a beautiful setting. But I had to tell myself, like, these are actors. You're not getting married.
You're not getting married. You're not married.
But it's like any wedding, like, oh, it makes me cry.
I know. Yeah.
Oh,
I've often said there was something about that scene, that water, you know, the sprinklers coming down, that I don't know, was so sort of beautiful and moving to me.
I Steve directed that episode, and I remember, you know, the water being such a big effect, and that first take, which is what's in the show, because it was shocking and it was cold and it was goofy and it wasn't cinematic. And I don't know who, but, you know, on the other side of the monitor's like, we have to go again. And Steve got up and he fought for it. He's like, no, this is better. It's not slick. It's not cool. They look terrible, but it's funny. Like, you know, and I was so glad, two reasons. Because I agreed with him, and the other's like, I really didn't want to get wet again because that water was so cold. I was such a shock when it opened up.
Yeah. Well, and I just remember that that it's how life is, right? Like, everything is not the perfect moment that you assume that it's going to be. And even though it is this beautiful moment with the candles, like, there's something that's going to screw it up.
Of course.
Yeah.
But that's the life I prefer to live in. Like, weird is good to me. Odd is really good to me. You know, that's what makes me laugh through life. That's just things slightly off kilter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the moment that always, like, anytime I see it, and I felt it as a human being in the moment that it happened, when he says, I'm going to Colorado, and Kevin says, all of us, right? Because with Michael, we all must go, right? Because how, to us, Michael is the office.
That's right.
But because of you, there's that transition there.
You know, I think when you find true love, then nothing else matters. So, like, his old, you know, ways aren't necessary, but... You know, eventually he finds his true family.
Which is you.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you. Here's a question that I've been asking everybody. Not everyone. I didn't think about it till halfway through, but when Michael Scott left to go be with you, there was obviously a hole on the show. And the question is, what do you feel like was the bigger loss, Steve Carell or Michael Scott?
Well, what do you mean by your question?
Well, that Steve was, you know, as you mentioned before, he is just such a good and loving person and really was the head of the ship.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In terms of the whole cast. Much. Like, when he left, I don't know if you know this, we retired his jersey. Like, literally, the number one on the call sheet did not exist after he left.
He certainly set the right energy of being the lead of the show. I feel like he brought out the best in everybody because he's so kind and he's so generous. And I feel like, I'll use myself an example. One morning, because we had those early morning makeup sessions, like 4:45 report in the morning. And Steve said, he's like, how are you? I said, oh, I'm tired. You know, I got up like 15 minutes before the alarm and I drove over the hill and I think Starbucks wasn't open. And he goes, oh, poor you, like being paid a lot of money to come be on a hit show. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. You guys don't complain out in L.A. In New York, this is our good morning. Check. But it was, you know, he was being playful, obviously, but it was like a reminder of like, this too will pass. And, you know, remember that because you might not have it so good one day.
Right. Well, you came in ultimately to be a love interest for Michael. But I have to tell you, the storyline between you and I on the show gets talked about a lot. And I think in the history of table reads that we had on the show, it was never more laughs because of how long that joke
I know
had been used to set up. And you know, when I get asked now about moments in the entire show mm-hmm. where I could not stop laughing, was you and the button. Is literally, if you
with
watch
the change,
it with the change, this is a nickel. This is a button. And there was something about the sweetness on your face and you just very genuinely explaining to Kevin that this was a button made me smile every single time. And I was like, I can't do it. And they're right there with the camera. I'm like, I can't do it. And basically then just turned it into a grin to say, I'm going to bang you. But that, yeah. Do you think that story could play now?
I mean, there's so much of The Office that I don't know if it could play now. It's interesting. So I just happened to watch that episode because my 10-year-old daughter and all her friends at school are really into The Office. And my daughter is a little behind the rest of her friends because I think it's weird for her.
So, yes.
But anyway, so we're watching that episode. And my husband, Eric, and I, like, we're just out of her eye line, but here comes your line, like, I'm totally going to bang her. And we look at each other like, see, and then look over to her face. Does she register that? And, you know, no, because somehow it's going right over their head, I think. Or maybe she doesn't, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I hope a lot of it still plays because I think it's well-intentioned. I don't think
yes.
we were cruel.
No.
Sadistic people on this show. I mean, but the stuff that doesn't play, it's interesting to think about, as we all think we're like well-intentioned, liberal-minded, caring people, and the stuff that we didn't pay attention to. And so, you know, you're asking me, is it okay to make fun of a person who we think is mentally handicapped? Probably not.
Right.
But it was really funny then. So what do we do with it? Like, you know,
right.
I don't know where that lives.
Right.
I certainly don't want to offend anybody. I mean, I think the joke is upon the person who made the mistake.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's
yes.
How could Holly be that thick-headed or that,
well,
you know.
Well, it's Dwight, really. I mean, yeah. It's really that it's Dwight who
well,
is.
Dwight's the naughty
who is,
one.
Is the naughty
but
one.
But I'm in the middle there of not using my own good judgment or maybe asking for a second opinion or, you know, I mean, we're all judgmental. We say we don't, but we judge everybody that walks down the block, you know.
Right.
In our heads, in the little private tapes in our heads.
Yes. Why do you think, I mean, part of why we're doing this exploration is we haven't filmed anything in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially by almost any measure now, The Office is the most watched show on television.
I know. Wild.
Why?
Well, I think these are relatable characters. And first of all, it's funny. So that's what's holding up through time. The writing is funny. And it's a really great ensemble of actors. And what, you know, you look back at what old show, like I Love Lucy still holds up, you know? It's funny.
Right. Right.
And it's not about like pop culture, you know, which obviously fades away. We don't understand the references over time. We forget them and such. I think also the culture of binge watching, it's, you know,
it's written well for that.
It's written well for that, you know. You know, I have friends who tell me their kids watch it as really like also a soothing effect. If they're having a bad day, they go and they pop in The Office and it lifts them.
Right. Why do you think that is? It's about paper salesmen, right?
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's that, you know, joy we get in knowing, like, well, at least my life isn't that bad. at least I'm not.
It's interesting, though, the fact that we're employees at a paper company that actually make a living doing one job with a specific mm-hmm. small. Because now
okay.
if you're selling paper, you're working at Staples
mm-hmm.
or you're just
yeah.
getting it from Amazon or whatever, like that sort of like office community, that group, whether you like the people or don't like the people, it's still a community.
Well, maybe it's also community is the key word. Maybe not so much like I could be in a job for the next 30 years and get my pension. I don't know if people are really dreaming about that, but I think you're right. A community, and this is such a world where everyone is expressing their emotions with emojis and, connecting with people, even misconnecting, you know,
yes.
Like the conflict is probably interesting and fun and enviable.
Yeah. Well, you talked about Paul being a fan of yours on The Wire. I mean, it cannot come as a surprise that everyone who was on set was such a huge fan of yours and The Wire. And the fact that it seems like the whole ensemble for The Wire ended up coming on at one point or other. It was like, how can we think of a way to go? Do we need to go to the docks? Is there a docks near Scranton? Is there any way we can get
Chris Bauer?
Yeah. So. But anyway, thanks for coming and talking to me.
It's my pleasure. It's so good to see you again.
It's so good to see you. Yeah, I will tell you, I go to college campuses and I'll talk. And, and I know that all people want is they want to hear Kevin. Yes. And just so you know, it almost always comes out as I'm totally going to bang Holly.
I know.
That's it.
That's all
206 episodes. 206 episodes. Oh, no, God. But I'm saying that's the line.
Here, maybe you'll update it for this generation, and you'll say with her permission.
Okay. With her permission and love.
Yes.
But it's funny.
That's
always the line. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Thank you, Amy, so much for coming in to sit down with me. Luckily, I am pretty sure I do not need Amy's permission to say that was one of the most delightful half hours of my life. That's what she said. I hope you all feel the same way. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful week, and I will see you next time for another episode of The Office Deep Dive. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our producer is Adam Macias. Our associate producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Cree Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.